You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another heartfelt episode of Ask a Drone You. My name is Paul.
My name is Rob. Heartfelt always, particularly in the sense that we appreciate you guys. I know I say that every day. It's probably tiring.
Hey,
saying that.
If you mean it though, if you mean it every time, doesn't that mean something?
I hope so, because it's definitely heartfelt, definitely meaningful to us, because yeah, we know that your time's precious, your time's important, and you're giving it up to be here with us. So thank you, particularly for those of you that send in a question, take time to do that. Special thanks to you all. And if you haven't done that, please do, because if you're listening, and particularly if you've been listening for a while, my hunch is that it's kind of caused you to think and maybe led you to consider some things that you hadn't considered before, which leads to questions. And we would love to hear those questions. So go to askdroneyou.com and send those in as soon as you can. Love to hear from you. Yeah, I'm used to you sort of taking it from there.
Sorry, I was mid-drone DJ comment. There is a new piece of news that says DJI Fly app works with the Mavic Air and the Spark, and I was commenting that it would be awesome if the Mavic Mini would actually work on DJI Go 4, so you can turn off the stupid downward-facing sensors and the precision landing, because you can't fly the drone in confined spaces because it constantly wants to land. Anyway.
Don't you know we have an obstacle course through our office that we're trying to fly DJI? So fix that, right?
Can't fly the Mavic Mini through it. Huh. Fly the Mavic Air through it, though.
You can.
And they're
do that.
Almost the same size when you put the prop guards on.
Which is astonishing.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
anyways,
I don't know.
Those are some big old prop guards on that Mini.
Jeez.
Anywho, all right. Welcome.
Where are we?
Do we have a sponsor?
We are the sponsor, Rob.
We are the sponsor.
Thank you to Rob, the sponsor. Thank you, Rob, for every day,
I'm gonna fly today,
that the sun glistens on your lack of hair as you walk into the office, gazing at the Drone You sign.
What can I say?
We're all grateful
for
you, Rob.
Have you posted that video of the sign opening and closing?
Negative.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
Me too.
It's pretty cool.
Kevin's been working so damn hard on that.
He has. Appreciate you, Kevin. I don't know if Kevin listens to these anymore, but...
Well, hopefully you do, Kevin, because we appreciate you.
That's right.
On that bombshell, this sponsor is our Drone You community, because we love everybody that we work with, and they really are like a family. And one thing that I've learned is develop culture at your company first. Sounds so silly, but it's so
no,
critical.
No, that's not silly at all. I think people would agree with that.
It's, you know what's important, silly is haircuts. Well, if you're bald, that is.
I totally agree. Although I've said, if I were a multi-millionaire, not yet, I think one of the extravagances I would give myself is to have somebody cut my hair cut my hair twice a week, so I don't have to do it myself. That's all I want. Okay.
Interesting.
Boy, that was a buzzkill. He's not sure what to say.
I feel like the last time I saw someone get a shave in like luxury was like, what is that movie, Coming to America? In like the 80s.
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Arsenio Hall.
Uh-huh. Actually really liked him.
I liked him too. I liked that movie.
That it reminded me of that, where like he's sitting there getting his haircut in this like lush, luxurious bathroom. And it's just so funny. I've never really seen someone get like a head shave.
Wow.
And then I was sitting here thinking, like, Rob's dream is to have another guy touch his head with a razor blade twice weekly.
You said guy.
Interesting.
You're making an assumption.
I made a lot of assumptions there. Which
That's
one
true.
Are you trying to pick
That's
apart?
True. I don't know. But I think we should just listen to Desi's question, because this is going downhill fast.
Hello, it's Desi. And I have a question regarding universal language. Not as in English and French and all that, but as far as aviation language, is there some language or lingo that should be universal across the UAS industry? I find that several of the companies that I've worked for have had their own language for certain maneuvers, and it seems that it should be industry specific. So I was wondering if you have any information on that. Thanks. You guys are awesome, and you do a fantastic job.
Thank you, Desi. I got to tell you, when I hear that, hello, it makes me happy. So it's always nice to hear from Desi. Hope that you're doing well. Thank you for the question. This is definitely a question that we've not had before. So I'm curious because, you know, this is a... It's a new industry, right? So I think a lot of the sort of language that Desi's talking about is still being developed, but she's right. The more uniformity that we can have in those types of areas relative to the industry, the better as it continues to progress and grow. And so you're not having to worry about those things. So you can worry about more important things than, well, what do they mean by that? Because we all know what's meant by that.
It's so funny because, you know, I take a great deal of pride in the fact that we are a required training for the NTSB investigators. And I love that fact. I love the opportunity to go out and train at the Federal Training Academy. It's mm-hmm. so cool. But I finally had a very embarrassing moment. Uh-oh. And I was surrounded by professional individuals, some agents, some not. And we're out there doing like our last exercise of the day. And typically Bill English, he's mm-hmm. from the NTSB. He's typically like on the other side doing the Cessna crash, walking people through stuff, or just like trying to be helpful. You know, he's not really an instructor there, but man, we could not do those trainings without him. He puts in so much work.
Well, he knows his stuff.
He really knows his stuff. Yeah. And he's not afraid to learn either, which is, gosh, respect that guy so much. Anyway, long story short, we're all doing this last exercise and someone's about to hit like a tree or something. And I was like, elevate, elevate, elevate. Like, you know, like thumbs up buttercup. You know, we teach everyone thumbs up buttercup. If you don't know what that means, well, I'm sorry. anyway, so I teach him thumbs up buttercup and Bill looks at me and he's like, you know, you have some weird terms for instructing people. And I just sat there like, oh no, what is he about to say next? And he's just like, you know, you could just tell people to climb instead of elevate. You say ascend, descend. He's like, you never say climb. He's like, you know why you say climb? Because ascend and descend are so closely related. If you're on a radio, it's almost impossible to discern. And that's when my smart ass responded with, well, we're not on radios. But he's right. He's totally right. There should be some sort of standard of language, but it also brings up kind of a more important point, which is there should be some sort of standard for drone operations as a whole. And I mean, even the FAA and AUVSI came out, you know, on the last DAC meeting and said, we have no standards of judging pilots.
Right.
And this goes back to, dear FAA, I feel like these are my thank you cards.
That's what I was waiting for you to pull it out.
Dear FAA.
You certainly went into thank you card voice.
Please give us executives who've actually worked in the field so we can solve problems now rather than covering our ass in 5 years for the mistakes that we made. Thank you. All right. Sorry.
So it's a thank you for listening card. Thank you
yes.
for reading card.
Yes.
Anyways.
Practical knowledge trumps theory all day long. So, and I say that because I really think, and I mean, the FAA and AUVSI are coming out and saying it, which gosh, ugh, thank you. Thank you for being honest with this community. And thank you for being open to working with us. I think, it takes massive cojones from Brian Wynn to just come out and say that. So there needs to be standardization of language. There needs to be standardization of operating skills. And we just put in a huge RFI response to the FAA saying, look, we think operations should be standardized. We think education should be standardized in this certain way. And we think, you know, instructors, well, this wasn't in the proposal, but we think instructors should be heavily vetted more so than just pilots. I mean, I will never forget going to the FAA symposium and hearing like multiple university professors ask probably the dumbest questions I've ever heard in my life during like some of the most complex, thought-provoking aviation discussions I've ever been a part of. Like, I mean, you're just sitting there in the room like, wow, the FAA really is like getting it together. They're hearing us. They're working on stuff. And then you hear the guy from USF ask this question about port authority. And you're just like, dude, 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 dude. I literally saw the chief prosecutor of the FAA roll his eyes, and I looked at him and I just started laughing. I couldn't stop laughing. Anyway, there needs to be standardization because people do typically fail in pretty much sequential forms. As Kerry Garrison says, they fly near things. And while that's true, we can actually much more heavily discern why, when they're flying near things, that they crashed. And in fact, there's so much evidence out there now, it's coming out through the public record, that most of these flyaways, most of these crashes are 100% pilot error. Either they don't know how to stop a flyaway, or they don't know how to actually control the drone. They just start pressing buttons, they just start doing things, and all of a sudden, people who in the industry have said, oh, this huge company that really knows what they're doing just had a huge astronomical crash that no one's heard of yet. So, you know, it's like one of those things where training is so critical. Standardizing the training would probably be helpful, but standardizing the language is going to be the first step in that direction. In fact, I remember talking to Desi about this at the Denver mapping class and just saying, I told her the NTSB story and just saying, you know what, you're right. We really should have some sort of language that's uniform across the board, right? If you climb, that means you are, you know, elevating the drone. Okay.
But don't you think a universal language takes a lot of time to develop?
No, not at all. There is a universal language right now in aviation that has been around for longer than I or you have been alive. And that should be the standard that's being used. And I'm sure a lot of manned pilots are going to be really excited that I just said that. But there is a great system. It does not need to be changed. And I think that a lot of drone manufacturers are working very, very hard to confuse the shit out of people. Because
as a motive.
I can't prove that, right? For be it for me to talk about other companies and what they do and think.
Okay, that's just how I heard the comment, but that's not what you're saying.
No, I'm saying that, like, you know, for example, on the Mavic Mini, you now open up the app and it goes through a tutorial, right? And they're like talking about flying safe, but they teach you to fly safe by hitting the takeoff button. And it's like, okay, what if it's really windy? You're about to have a tip over and you want to stop it. In automatic takeoff mode, there's no adjustments that you can make to stop it. Like, if it's going to tip over, crash, or hit someone, it's going to happen, period. So I think that's extremely unsafe. I think the fact there's no flight mode switch on that drone is extremely unsafe. And I think that there's no way to stop a flyaway, which is, again, extremely unsafe. So
what you're saying about universal language, if I'm understanding you correctly, is that the way to speed that process up is to use the current manned language, essentially, to the extent possible.
For sure.
Okay.
The left
stick, I like that.
The left stick is elevation, and we call it climbing, right?
Yeah.
The only motion you should never do on a drone is fly straight down. Same stick. On that same stick, you can also do yaw, right? This is not yeehaw. It's yaw.
It could be yeehaw, yaw.
Yeehaw, yaw.
Anyways, okay.
Anyway, Bill's going to make fun of me for that later. Anyway, yaw, it means rotation, okay? And that those two things are often miscommunicated during trainings. I would say even during some of my trainings, I'll notice that I'll say roll right and they'll rotate right. And I'm no. So I have this thing where I like touch people in a certain place on their shoulder to help them subconsciously say it's this hand, not this hand. Because you would not be surprised, even in the Austin class, how more than probably 50% of the people confused roll and yaw.
Yeah. And a big part of that just shows that there's not enough practice going on either. Because the more that you practice it the right way, good practice leads to good habits, leads to making those kinds of decisions without having to think about it.
I wish I would have understand what you just said when I was 21, because I would be a multi-billionaire right now. It took me like 10 years to really let that concept that Rob just said sink in. Holy shit, it's true.
And drone flying
actually taught me that, because I realized how quickly things can go awry, and I realized how quickly chaos can ensue. And I understood that I need to create these habits now, because over time, these habits turn into routines and things become easy.
Yep, that's right. But again, it's got to be good practice. It's got to be the right kind of practice. Like, I could go practice my golf swing all day long and I'm still going to suck because it's probably not right to begin with.
That's actually a great analogy to use, because Topgolf is a great place to get practice because you have specific short-term goals that are helping you work on specific segmented portions or compartmentalized portions of your golf game. Whereas if you just go out to the driving range, you're probably not as structured in how you're practicing, what you're practicing, your short game, your long game. I want to get that 150-yard mark perfect every single time. Like, you can't, it's harder to do that. Yeah. So perfect practice model, which came from K. Anders Ericsson. Many are familiar with the book, the 10 Outliers, is it? 10,000 hour rule.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Malcolm Gladwell could not have screwed up that information more. Yeah, he's definitely an entertainer, not an information person, in my opinion, because K. Anders Ericsson wrote like literally a 100-page paper that was like, this is all wrong. This is not what my research says at all. Like,
what? Really?
Yes.
I did not know that. Wow.
We talked about that in the first couple hundred episodes of this podcast.
I don't remember.
I don't remember everything I've said the show, nor will I ever.
Certainly not what I've said on this show.
True. Anyway.
Anywho.
I think we've covered that very well.
Yeah,
we're talkative today.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's in progress. Let me ask you this. Who's at the forefront of developing that universal language, that universal methodology for the UAV industry? Or is it still sort of a conglomerate of people, including us, hopefully?
Interesting way to phrase the question, because I think it's already been developed by the FAA. I think the FAA have been stalwart advocates in treating unmanned aviation as manned aviation, in trying to create that uniform language. Mm-hmm. I think it already exists. I think this is a factor of uneducated people training other people.
Gotcha.
So this is kind of like, you know, we had that conversation about one of our employees who's very, very good at discernment. He's very astute. He knows exactly what to do. But oftentimes he lets the opinions and outside environmental factors weigh on his decision and take him away from the right decision into another decision. I think that's a perfect analogy for what's happening here. The FAA has made it extremely clear. Like, you take the Part 107 test, right? They talk about roll, they talk about bank angle, they talk about all that. You should know these terms, okay? They're you know, with repetition, they're not difficult to pick up. But when you've got the blind leading the blind, all of a sudden, this system that we've had for 60, 70 years, now all of a sudden, who's going to be at the forefront? The FAA is already at the forefront. It's right. Just about taking that information. And I think also that that navigation that I just said with our employee who is distracted, even though he knows what to do.
Yeah.
I think the exact same problem is happening at the FAA right now.
Very interesting.
Because they're like, how do we judge drone pilot operations? Well, let's think about this. If I am in a Cessna, am I going to do an engine run up on the runway to make sure that I have proper thrust for the entirety of my flight? Yes. Now, if I'm flying a drone, don't you think it's a good idea to do a battery test to then test the actual voltage of the battery to know if it's going to drop all of a sudden mid-flight and you're going to crash and nail someone's dome? Yes. These are types of nuanced information that only we have, frankly.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
That's why we put in that RFI. I think we can help people without being overly stringent or become the advocate of like, you must do it our way. We're not saying to do it our way. We're saying after training tens of thousands of pilots, this is what we have noticed. This is what's working. There's a reason that drone pilots have this like silence reputation. And I love seeing it more and more. More and more enterprise people are like, you know, we hired a bunch of drone U pilots, and you could really see the difference between those pilots and everyone else. Example is California. You know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about, and I think that's awesome. Not to mention the Boston Drone Film Festival, right?
Yeah.
I think it was second place, but drone U student.
One.
Congratulations to, do you remember his name? I don't have it in front of me.
I want to say it was Ben, but I can't remember.
Ah, shoot.
Now I feel bad.
We will later. We want to congratulate him because that's really, really, really cool.
We genuinely want you to succeed.
Mm.
That's going to do it for us today. My name is Paul.
My name is Rob.
Peace.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone Youth.